All right, let's head over to our Zoom line and bring in Joe Sinnott with Whitting Partners. He also hosts the Energy Detox podcast. How are you doing today, Joe?
Oh, navigating the hustle and bustle of this time of year, Jason.
I tell you, and you're a Notre Dame fan, so you have Saturday. Is it Saturday or Friday? They play Friday, don't they?
Friday night, we got the first honor of being the first ever home playoff college football game.
So we're going to discuss that a little bit later as well. I have a question or two for Mr. Joe Sinnott about the Notre Dame SMU game. I also want to ask him about the Jets ownership. There's a recent article that just came out in between this morning when Joe and I booked this interview to today, where Joe, I don't know if you've seen the news story or not, but the Jets ownership is making decisions on players based on Madden rankings. So we'll tie that into your professional world when owners of companies start making decisions based on, you know, maybe they bought some award. You know, when there's a lot of ways that you can either elevate yourself or others can reduce your worth. And if owners are looking at that over the actual reality, so I want to get your take on that. But the reason we brought Joe Sinnott in here of Whitting Partners and the host of the Energy Detox podcast is to talk about the Kirk Cousins benching in Atlanta, Georgia with the Falcons. Sorry, I got sidetracked there for a second. We have a lot of snow. We have it like schools are closed in my neck of the woods here, and interstates were closed earlier, and so we have a lot of news percolating and that sort of thing. But Joe, first of all, explain to the audience what it is you do on a regular basis, because you know, I on one hand, sports is a great way to have a conversation about the bigger picture. But on the other hand, you're not really a sports coach consultant. You're more of an executive coach than a coach consultant. So explain to the audience what you do.
Yeah, my focus is definitely not sports related coaching, unless you consider coaching T-ball. But definitely there's a slight gap between those T-ball teams and NFL players, Jason. But honestly, regardless of, you know, the industry that you might find executive coaches in, it's all the same stuff. It's helping people communicate better, make better decisions, exude more executive presence, confidence. And I guess in a nutshell, Jason, it's helping people think. So a lot of smart people that I work with, predominantly in the oil and gas industry, they got the answers to a lot of the tough questions, but they don't always have the time and the energy and the ability to think. So as a coach, I come in and, you know, a lot of times, Jason, I'm just asking a bunch of dumb questions to help them think more clearly, more intentionally, and come up with the answers that, again, are largely locked inside of them. So in that respect, you know, very different, or at least slightly different at times from what you might get from an advisor. I'm not coming in and telling people what to do. I'm coming in and trusting that, look, they likely have the answers. They need that time. They need that space. They need a coach to help them be able to execute more effectively.
It's interesting, in the last, I'd say 10 years, the business of college sports has evolved so much that it is almost like a business. When you look at universities, whether it's the research department, whether it's the sports department, the universities now have so many revenue generators, and now they have the public-private partnerships, if you will. And when I was talking with Coach Craig Bohl of North Dakota State University, who then went on to coach at the University of Wyoming, had a quarterback by the name of Josh Allen, who is now playing for the Buffalo Bills. Coach Craig Bohl would do a weekly update for the North Dakota State Bison for our radio station that I was working for at the time, where I was executive producer. And you know, there'd always be time between commercials. There'd be time before and after, that type of thing. So I had a lot of intimate time with him, actually, in terms of conversations. And he would talk about how his job was, he was a CEO. He was a CEO. And so in the world of sports now, whether you're in college, whether you're in the pros, Joe, it's a business. And so a coach literally is a CEO of an organization. So when I look to you for advice, I'm really looking more for executive coaching CEO advice than I am for, hey, who do you think's going to win this weekend? What's the spread on the Cleveland Browns game? So let's talk about the Kirk Cousins situation here for a second, because there are so many leadership things that have happened in here, from when do you tell your team? When do you sit down and tell both the person who's going to be the new quarterback or sales manager or CEO or president or whatever the position is? And you know, when do you demote the other person who's under a guaranteed contract, Joe? Forget about that little idiosyncrasy as well, because there's repercussions that if you get rid of somebody, you're going to have to pay their severance. You're going to have to pay their parachute clause. You're going to have to pay whatever exit strategy the lawyer put in on the contract on the front end. So just in a quick little overview, what's your initial takeaway from what, by the way, just so people know, bringing in a backup in the NFL to a team that has won more than X amount of games, whatever, this has never happened in the history of the NFL before. There's never been a situation like this before. So that's another reason why we want to have kind of a takeaway on some of the decisions, some of the thought processes that are happening. So what's your takeaway, just your quick overview of it?
Well, I'd say the thing that rises to the top for me when I'm looking at these things is, how is somebody in Kirk Cousins' position responding? So yes, you've got the decision makers at the top of the organization, the CEO, if you will. And again, obviously the parallels between leaders of sports teams or college football coaches and CEOs. I mean, they go hand in hand, Jason. They're tasked with understanding the big picture, how everything is connected. If I make a decision, how does that affect, second, third, fourth degree impact? So we'll set that aside for now, but that is important. When I look at this, I say, all right, how are the impacted parties responding? And I think with Kirk Cousins, you have a lot of positive examples, just based on the things he said and even his mannerisms and interviews and such, that are positive, right? Anybody that's looking for some sort of headline to say, oh, look how upset Kirk Cousins is, X, Y, and Z, he didn't give him a lot of that, which speaks to, perhaps him as a person, speaks to his experience, his seniority, if you will. But those are some of the things that I'm looking for, because again, from a leadership standpoint, from a coaching standpoint, Jason, it's all about, the eyeballs and the ears that are trained on you, watching how you respond, watching your reaction to these types of things. So I'll pause there, Jason, but that's definitely the number one filter, if you will, that I'm looking at all this through.
So let's start from the beginning, really, and take a look at what caused this. And if you're a organization, how do you respond? If you're an executive, how do you respond? Because a lot of this seems reactionary management. Mm-hmm. So you've got a good young core. All you need is this veteran leader to come in and mentor these people, but also bring in a skill set. So very common in sales. You got a bunch of young sales that are a bunch of young go-getters. They maybe don't know how to quite make the relationships like they should. They maybe don't know how to do some of these different things. You bring in a veteran sales person to really kind of mentor and move things along. This happens in a lot of different areas. And so then somebody in the organization says, you know what? What if it doesn't work out like you say? And then after they escort you out of the room, the next person says, you know, that person was right. What if it doesn't go exactly how you say? And then they'll escort that person out of the room. You see what I mean? It's like at one point somebody in the room finally got through to the person who's looking through rosy colored glasses in a very linear thought process, because not having a backup plan, not having something in line, never is a good place in business. And so during the draft, they shocked the world and draft a quarterback that wasn't even projected to go in the first round by many experts. Now, he would have, I'm sure, because I think the Raiders were going to get him or wanted to get him as well. But so they grab kind of a reaction to the reaction, Joe, if that makes sense, because they needed a quarterback, so they grabbed it. But this quarterback had some leadership and some pedigree and a lot of intangibles, if you will. So if you're an organization and it's clearly you've made a mistake because they guaranteed Kirk Cousins so much money that if they cut him, he's still going to count against the cap. So there's so many signs to say that there was a lot of mistakes made. How do you handle that? Do you double down? Do you try to cover up your mistakes? Do you own up and admit it? The press conference I saw with Kirk Cousins is he owned up to his mistakes. Mm-hmm. So on his level, he said, I didn't play good enough. I don't know if he blamed the injuries or what he just said, but the very short clips I saw, he just said, I wasn't good enough. I haven't seen anything from the coach, the general manager, or the ownership yet, but what are your thoughts on when it's clear that you've made mistakes and everybody in the world outside of the boardroom knows it? Yeah. What's next, Joe?
Sure. Well, it helps if you start with the facts and the specifics. So, you know, just real quick on, you know, why was he benched? What I did like, and again, I don't remember if it was the GM or the coach or whatever, but I mean, they said, okay, it was too many turnovers. They also said something about, you know, poor decision-making, but at the end of the day, that was numbers. It was, hey, look, we're pointing to the turnovers. It's just inescapable. The numbers have been atrocious the last couple of games. And what's nice about that is, you know, it makes it easier from a leadership standpoint to say, hey, here's why we're making the decision. It's not this vague sort of, hey, you know, we like the, you know, we like the hope and the opportunity that Michael Penix brings to things. Like, none of that. They had specifics. That being said, Jason, going back to, I mean, you used the word mistakes a couple times in your question there, right? You know, how do you respond when you've made a mistake or you've seemingly made a big mistake to the tune of, what's he getting paid? You know, $45 million a year or something absurd. The first thing there, Jason, is, all right, well, was it a mistake or was it the right decision that didn't pan out? Because, again, you look back to just last season before he got hurt, Kirk Cousins, the stats were great. Clearly, he's not, you know, it's not like, you know, he was a huge risk last year. It's not like he had a couple mediocre seasons and they were paying for his potential that they hoped they would unlock. No, this was somebody that obviously had been proven and he was still a high performer minus the injury last year, which again, they're not saying is necessarily impacted his recent poor play. So the question is, Jason, was it a mistake or was it a sound decision that didn't play out? Those are two very big things. And, you know, the beauty is you can come out and, you know, you can own up to your mistake, if you will, and not make excuses while also acknowledging that, hey, you know, we're happy with, we made the decision. We're not happy with the results. We're not going to stop making decisions like this, right? You know, we're not going to move away from our philosophy, our thought process, our risk tolerance, just because this particular one doesn't seem to be playing out. That's the type of statement that is confident. Again, it's not evasive. It's not passing the buck. It's saying, look, I own the decision, but I would make this decision again if, you know, if faced with the same set of details. That's the idea behind a sustainable leader, a confident leader, and one who's willing to just, you know, own up, if you will, and then completely run away from all of the thought process, the research, the opinions of his staff. Because in essence, once you run away from that, now, yeah, it might seem like you're taking ownership, Jason, but you're actually throwing everybody and the whole process under the bus when maybe, again, not saying it's the case or not here, but, you know, maybe this was just luck of the draw, right? Nobody knew that Kirk Cousins was going to be stinking it up the last 5 weeks or whatever.
Well, I got to tell you that I have a very tough one for you now. An extremely tough one, because hindsight is 2020, and if we're looking at the facts and some of the realities, that Kirk Cousins came from Minnesota, where I am right now. Mm-hmm. And it's become very apparent that Kevin O'Connell has a way with quarterbacks, that he's got a certain system that really accentuates the positives of certain quarterbacks that fit within the system that he has created, whether it's Kirk Cousins, whether it's Josh Dobbs, whether it's Nate Mullins, whether it's Sam Bradford, and hopefully JJ McCarthy and potentially Daniel Jones, who specifically went to Minnesota because of the organization. That's what's so interesting in sports right now, because it's become such a business, whether it's college level or the pro level, it's becoming very clear that the organizational culture and the head coach are extremely important, more than almost the stars. If you have a good head coach, a good organizational structure, and you bring in a star quarterback or a star CEO or a star salesman, boy, you can do some wonderful things. What's interesting about this right now is that with the Kirk Cousins situation, one can very easily ask the question, how much of this is Kevin O'Connell? Meaning for Sam Bradford now, who's going to be a $40 million man, how would you educate CEOs, executives, board members to evaluate somebody like Sam Bradford, who should be evaluated the way Kirk Cousins should have been evaluated? Because is Sam Bradford going to fit in our system? He didn't in the other three. But I'll tell you what, he's having better numbers than anybody else in the NFL right now, despite the lack of MVP discussions for him. So this happens in business a lot. It's even happened in, you know, the WWE, where a writer will go to a different organization only to find out that it was the culture of the WWE that made the writing so good. You know, it happens in Hollywood all the time because you have a certain team or you have an effective leadership. Personally, back when I was in the hospitality industry, I won two national awards as a food and beverage guy at the Ramada. So we were awarded the best Ramada in the entire world within our organization, but there was a team of five of us. And when the team of five went away, they've never won the award since then. So it wasn't me, and it was all of us together. So Joe, how do you really gauge somebody who's coming into your organization when it might be a lot of the organization they're leaving? If that makes sense, that really made that person become a star. So you really have to know what type of support you're going to give the new person. So I'm not sure if you understood the question or not, but there's no right answer. But how would you advise somebody on evaluating talent like that, who now is it the organization or is it the talent?
Well, it's the right question to ask, you know, and I think I understand where you're coming from. In fact, you know, I guess there's a couple different places you could turn. I think, you know, Jocko's Extreme Ownership book, if you're familiar with Jocko or the concept, you know, he uses the analogy of, you know, these teams of potential SEALs who, you know, you switch up the dynamic, you switch up the leader, if you will. And even with the same resources, it's a totally different team, right? And so, yeah, how do you identify without putting them through these grueling exercises like, again, the SEALs have to go through? You know, how do you actually determine whether or not you're going to have somebody that is a spark that could take, again, the standard same group of teammates and actually have them playing at a higher level? How do you do that? Now, it's an open question, and there's no one answer, of course, Jason. But just by asking that question to say, okay, you know, what can we run them through? You know, that's the whole idea behind scenario-based interviews and conversations, right, Jason? Getting a feel for, hey, this is a real-life scenario. Again, sports is filled with scenarios, right? I mean, how many plays in a given football game? How would you respond? What's your initial reaction to this? And that's why it actually works well in an interview to have these situations, because you're getting that immediate gut reaction, which is kind of what you need. Remember what I said earlier about, you know, how I operate and what I do. I'm working with a lot of individual leaders who they don't always have the time to think. So how do you build up that muscle memory so that in the moment they can make a decision that, you know, 8 or 9 times out of 10 is the quote right decision, Jason. So some of these situational things, again, instead of just talking in hypotheticals or relying on recommendations or rumors and hearsay from how a given individual carried himself in the clubhouse or the locker room. It doesn't take a lot to actually put them through some real life scenarios asking them these questions and get a sense of their immediate reactions, if their gut, if how they're wired, their DNA, Jason, if it's aligned with your culture, how you want them thinking in the moment. So does that make, if I understood your question, my question now is, did my answer make sense?
It does. And I wonder how, and this is extremely common in any organization, Kirk Cousins' demotion is based on performance. At the end of the day, it's performance. And, this happens a lot where people get fired or they're demoted for performance reasons. That's not necessarily the email that comes out that says, oh, sorry, but John Johnson's no longer with us. He's the best person in the world. We can't believe he's not with us anymore. You know what I mean? It's like we fired him, but he's still the best person in the world. So when we're looking at a performance demotion, how do you disclose that to the rest of your organization? Because on one hand, you do want to be honest with them, but on the other hand, you don't want to throw the person under the bus either. And I've never seen an owner say, we failed him. Actually, I have. I've seen a couple times, I think in sports, an owner said that we failed the head coach or we failed the general manager. But on one hand, I can probably count that. And oftentimes, it's the lack of resources or the lack of support that causes leadership to fail. And so when it's performance based, Joe, how do you disseminate that out to the masses?
Well, you ask yourself what the most positive and factual message is. And typically, Jason, what that is, even if it's performance based, the positive message is this decision for so-and-so to leave the company is best for all parties. That's the dream, right? And if it's true, now, first of all, I mean, as any sort of leader should be asking this, how do you get to that point, right? How do you get to the point where this is a mutually beneficial decision? So, it's easy to say, well, if it's an underperformer, can you give him or her the resources they need to help improve their performance? Obviously, there's PIPs, right? Performance improvement plans that people can go through. But in many cases, Jason, if you're honestly asking yourself the question, hey, what is best for all parties involved? In many cases, the answer is to part ways. And it's true. And if you can start there and then fill in with whatever, again, facts you want to fill in, maybe your company, well, it doesn't matter the size of the organization. If you're giving them some, support as they walk out the door, whether it's coaching or, resume assistance or whatever, that could fuel that same talking point, which is we want what's best for all of our current employees, even if they're walking out the door, and getting them out the door sooner rather than later, instead of being here where it clearly wasn't a fit, that's the best decision. And we believe that so much that we're going to give that person some extra resources to help make sure that, again, they emerge stronger than they would have ever been if they were still at our company. So it's those types of things, Jason, that I've seen that messaging work well. Unfortunately, I also feel like that's in the minority, right? It's a lot easier to say nothing or to have some corporate speak, or to your point, Jason, you come out with some line where maybe, you take some ownership where you should, but why not start with the positive answer, which is this is best for everybody, even unfortunately, the person, that's going to be perhaps without a paycheck for some period of time.
This next segment, I forgot to grab, or I didn't grab the news story, so I'm going off of memory here, but it does have to do with the Jets ownership running the organization from, and this is why I wish I had the sheet of paper with that we got off the newswire, is his kid's name is like Click and Clack or Jack and Rack. He's got these two kids, and they have rhyming names like it's some kind of morning show on Pittsburgh's Hot 100 or something like that. It's like Click and Clack coming to you. And so I started chuckling. I mean, I'm reading this story and I'm laughing out loud. Like it's the Sunday comics, it's just absolutely hilarious because Joe, I got to wonder if the Jets owner really believes that the Madden ranking is real. Like it's like, like it's some sort of real life score that's modernized and it's part of analytics and he should be a part of it. And so I just got three things that I want to go over with this. But first of all, your reaction to organizations that would be getting using information like this, not vetting information that whether it's new or whether it's something that maybe it's whatever it might be, but making decisions for an organization based on rumors and based on moments of the day or whatever the case is. Talk to me a little bit about, you know, how executives should handle this, how people should handle something like this, because at the end of the day, it does not make an organization look good at all. You know, like maybe you make your hire based on how many likes somebody had on a post or something like that, you know? And so, oh, well, they must be excellent out in the field because they got 100 likes. So my goodness, you know, and honestly, that would be a very similar kind of analogy deal. So talk to me a little bit about that. And then next would be about getting information from the family members that have nothing to do with organizations. And they have, and it could be your poker buddies or it could be your fish, people who have no part of the organization that have that much influence that they can actually determine outcomes and livelihoods and that kind of thing. So part of it's nepotism, part of it's incompetence, you know, and part of it is that I don't know if transparency is the right word, but it has a lot to do with keeping your mouth shut, I suppose, and biting your tongue during meetings if you want to keep your job. So I mean, you know, what, how would you coach somebody through this kind of kerfuffle, weird PR disaster? You're not a public relations specialist by any means, but this is executive blunders here. I mean, if you're really making decisions for your billion-dollar organization based on a video game's ranking of a player, and by the way, multiple, more than Jerry Jeudy, this was offensive tackles, cornerbacks, like apparently the analytics in Madden is all about the Jets. So whatever direction you want to go, Joe.
Well, it's all interesting. I have not seen these stories of which you speak, Jason, but kind of piecing things together, I guess my first thought is, from a cultural standpoint within organizations, a healthy culture is one that isn't afraid of any data. So, you know, wherever that the data is coming from, healthy organization says, hey, look, we're going to take it all into account. We're going to analyze it when it comes to, again, you know, determining the potential of employees, where the employees might fit. And a healthy one says, look, we're not afraid of that data, but we're also not going to weaponize it. We're also not going to pretend like any one piece of data is going to be the decision maker. Everything needs to be seen in context. And if you can get to that point, I think you use the word transparency, where, again, a lot of this stuff is fairly transparent. You know how it's being used. And the ultimate goal, so we said a couple minutes ago, if somebody has to leave the organization, the ultimate goal is to come up with an answer as to, all right, well, what's best for everybody? And if there's some piece of data that, you know, turns a light bulb on for somebody, like that's not a bad thing.
You know,
and
what,
where
Joe,
I see this, Jason. Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, just to interject for just a second, just to kind of even bring it into the boardroom again or bring it into the office, that, you know, again, this is a physical performance based industry we're talking about with the National Football League. And so a lot of the Madden stuff is strength and speed and agility. And, you know, there's a lot of that types of abilities. Joe, I've taken a lot of personality tests for companies, and I've taken a lot of those types of tests. That's not much different, actually, because however Madden comes up with their ranking may actually be more accurate than whatever these personality tests that I took are, if that makes sense to you.
Well, sure. All these things. And again, I administer some of these assessments. Why? Because it's data. Some of it you take with a grain of salt. Some of it might not be terribly accurate, but it all allows you to ask good questions. Hey, if this is true, if this Madden ranking is true, well, here's two or three questions that I should be asking about this individual. If this personality assessment or behavioral assessment is true, All right. Well, here's a couple questions to ask. It doesn't hurt to ask questions, which is, again, we shouldn't be afraid of the data. But here's bringing it back to, you know, especially the head of an organization, whether it's head of the Jets or, you know, head of a oil and gas company. The question is, all right, well, what are you doing to control the narrative? One, do you know what the narrative is? Because if the narrative is, hey, we're using Madden to determine, you know, who's playing or who we're going to pick up or who we're going to trade or whatever, like, that's not a healthy narrative. Or if it's, hey, you know, this company, they've got this new assessment that they're treating like gospel. That's 95% of how they're determining who's going to get promoted. Clearly, those stories aren't true. My question for the CEO or anybody that of, you know, in a position of influence is, what are you doing to control the narrative? Why not come out and not just say, hey, this is how we're using the stuff. This is how we're not using the stuff. Why not take a page from Kirk Cousins, who said, hey, you know, once I found out that I was demoted, you know what I did? I called my successor, Michael Penix Jr. And I said, hey, man, I wish you the luck, you know, best of luck. Here's how I'm going to support you. Why? Because Kirk Cousins says, I like to shoot elephants in the room, he said. And he said, you know, hey, I wanted to just go ahead and shoot one. So, you know, I gave Michael a call. If you're the CEO, shoot those elephants, right? Shoot anybody that's saying, oh, this is how you're using the data. I still don't understand why executives are so darn slow to respond to these things, these narratives that fester within the organizations. Some of that is because they don't know what's happening. And other times it's because, again, they don't see the second and third order impacts of allowing these things to fester for, you know, longer than they should. So there's my answer, or a couple different answers to.
I'm glad you brought up the elephant in the room thing, because I wanted to bring that up as well. And the reason I wanted to bring it up is because that was an extremely intelligent comment to make for someone who has made over $300 million as a quarterback in the Kirk Cousins brand. Kirk Cousins has always been about Kirk Cousins' brand. And when you take a look at how he's handled all of his just very controversial situations, whether it was the tampering from Minnesota to Atlanta, or being blindsided with the draft pick of Michael Penix, to now this benching, he has made a lot of money. He's used a lot of class, and he's been able to really navigate some very choppy waters while making money the whole time. So there's a lot that businesses can learn from this Kirk Cousins benching. And that is how the Atlanta Falcons organization handled it, how the ownership handled it, and how Kirk Cousins has handled it. Because from start to finish, Kirk Cousins is the one who's really made the most. And he's the one who's kind of, I guess, the bad PR, if you will. But he came out and he said, hey, you know, I like to shoot elephants. And all of a sudden, his bad PR went away. Funny how accountability can really do quite a bit for your organization. Isn't that right, Joe?
Well, yeah, that's it. And again, for somebody like Kirk Cousins, he's been around long enough and he doesn't need all that much time to sincerely and genuinely say the right thing. He's to that point now. Obviously, you know, you take some, you know, 23, 24 year old, you know, if they're shooting from the hip, there is, you know, those shots might not be so good. But I mean, clearly Kirk Cousins took the time, he prepared what he was going to say, even if it was in a casual form. So whether it's the shooting the elephants comment, or, you know, one of the other things he said that I loved was, there's no entitlement in this game, right? You know, you got to earn your right, no matter who you are or what you've done before, there's no entitlement. And, you know, that's not a throwaway line for somebody like him, right? He's, you know, he, again, his brand, he's earned the right to say something like that. And for people to say, ooh, I should pay attention, that's valuable stuff. Ooh, what evidence of entitlement do we have? Ooh, you know, what decisions are we making with our personnel that are based more on entitlement and, you know, sunk cost fallacies, because we're paying this person, so we're going to play him no matter what, versus what's best for the team? What's going to increase our odds of getting into the playoffs and ultimately, you know, meeting the goal of winning the Super Bowl? So, yeah, that's it. And I guess, you know, selfishly coming back to my role, it's getting people to the point where, you know, they choose the words that convey the message they want to convey. I'm not in the business, like you said, I'm not in PR. I'm not in the business of helping people BS their way through a career or a tricky situation. I'm in the business of helping people make sure that what they're saying, what they're conveying is what they want to say, what they want to convey, what is true. But so many people out there, especially in industries like oil and gas, where it's go, 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 and there's a lot of pressure, and they're shooting from the hip. They're being blunt and transparent, which is, you know, typically a good thing. But they wind up damaging their brands. They wind up damaging their teams. They wind up damaging their reputations with zero upside, Jason. So anyway, that's how I view all these situations.
One last question, one last category, if you will, with Joe Sinnott, Whitting Partners. Earlier, we talked about the Notre Dame game. They're playing Indiana. I think I might have said SMU earlier.
That's all right. All road, well, here in Pennsylvania, Penn State, SMU. So that's all right. We'll, yeah, somehow there, we'll forgive your conflation of the those four teams.
And I did mean Penn State and SMU, but you went to Notre Dame. So if there I said Notre Dame, that's the connection there. And so Notre Dame, Indiana, interesting game on its own. For a lot of different reasons. It sounds like it's going to be a snow fest. And just a couple tidbits to look at. Number one, three of the four games are in northern climates, so you're going to have snow. So you may see an organizational meeting talk about neutral sites next year, eliminating the first round home playoff game at the colleges, which I think they're going to do anyways. More control over the purse, if you will, more control over the bank. Make it a regional. They can sell it to cities, much like the WWE now is doing. Did you know that, Joe, that the WWE has gotten to the point to where cities now pay them to come? Yep, cities now pay them to come because of what they did in Philadelphia. They showed the two-day economic impact that their event brings to a city like Philadelphia, Indianapolis or Cleveland or one of those two cities. Now paid them. Before, they would just like forego taxes, which is almost like paying them, but now cities are like paying these organizations. So Joe, you specialize in culture. If I was going to describe what you do, is you help people identify and possibly change their culture. They might not even need to change it. They might just need to identify what it is and say, oh no, that's what we do want. Or, oh no, that's not what we want. We want this as our culture. And so helping people guide through that. Southern Methodist University had the death penalty. They were not allowed to play college football for a year, and they had sanctions. Well, they're now playing Penn State, who also was not allowed to play college football for different reasons. One was a financial crimes. The other one was unethical human rights crimes. Both are now playing for the college championship. I forget how many college teams start, but there's only 12 left that have a seat at the table, Joe. And those two are two of the 12. Think of the amount of change that had to come through their cultures in order to get where they are today. I mean, SMU, they would drive up to a recruit's a school and a gold Trans Am, and that recruit would drive away in that gold Trans Am. I mean, they weren't hiding it at all. And then, of course, the Penn State situation, that's so atrocious, I don't even want to describe anything about it. So talk to me about the change of culture, the ups and the downs, and think about what Penn State had to go through. Think about what SMU had to go through, right or wrong. We're where we are today.
I mean, you talk about the ups and downs and the changes, Jason. Unfortunately, my mind goes to the fact that there's no loyalty in really any sports, right? Professional or college. Clearly what the transfer portal and NIL and, you know, everything else has done. You know, people are constantly moving. So when you have something that's worthy of the death penalty, if you will, you know, we're at a point where there's going to be a lot more shoulder shrugging because people are turning over at a rate that, you know, was never seen before. So bringing it back to organizations, the question is, okay, well, how do you prevent that in an organization? How do you get to the point where, you know, your company is differentiated? Your company is seen as something that is in it for the long haul, cares about those black eyes, doesn't just rest on the fact that, yeah, people have short memories in 2024 or soon to be 2025. And again, you're right. That's all culture. Do you have a culture that's built on long-term, sustainable values that are clear? Or again, do you just shrug your shoulders and say, hey, we're living in a throwaway culture from a societal standpoint. Why not embrace it and, you know, carpe that diem and all the above, right? So again, that tone is absolutely set from the top, whether it's the CEO of a company, whether it's the, you know, general manager or the CEO of a professional sports team, or whether it's the president of a university, athletic director, maybe the coach, depending on how much, you know, control each of those entities has on a program. You know, do you want to be differentiated or not? Selfishly, again, my hope is that Notre Dame, you know, likes to talk about its legacy and likes to, you know, rest on its, you know, however many decades of history. And, you know, I think by and large, they still try to use that as a differentiator more so now. You know, it's not to go off on a soapbox or tangent here, Jason, but, you know, you went back, you know, the last 10, 20 years, it was always, well, there's nothing special about Notre Dame. Why is anybody going to go there? They haven't won a national championship in years. Why is somebody going to go play in a cold weather climate when, again, they can go play somewhere else? They can get that television exposure. They don't need to play for Notre Dame anymore. You know, all these games are televised. Whereas now, I'd almost argue it's coming full circle, because now any school, whether it's Notre Dame or somebody else, they have an opportunity to differentiate themselves and say, hey, look, we recognize that you can go play anywhere at any time for anybody, for any sum of money, no strings attached. We want to be something different. Again, I'm not saying Notre Dame is there, but, you know, that's an opportunity for them to differentiate themselves from everything else that's going on in college football. It's no different for organizations, Jason. The organization that can say, yes, you can go find any number of companies that have this work arrangement, work from home, all these perks, the compensation, the visibility, everything else. We genuinely have something different here. If this matches you, great. If not, you know, we don't want you here because we don't think this is what's going to be best for you. Again, that messaging all starts from the top, but it takes time. It takes some commitment. And quite frankly, it takes having a team of fellow leaders around you to make sure that you're beating that message, you know, into the heads of all your stakeholders. So anyway, that's my, you know, high level view of all this.
You mentioned stuff. Notre Dame. And of course, you know, I was spoon fed fear and guilt as raised as a Catholic. I was an altar boy and a Sunday school teacher and went to a Catholic school. And so a lot of the Ten Commandments is very much out in my consciousness 24/7. And so when I take a look at the current culture shift that's happening in college sports, I almost wonder if the sport of college football and basketball and everything else isn't heading more towards that SMU death penalty, Penn State look the other way culture, as opposed to a more of the old way of the, you know, pure athletics, separate the money from the sport type of a culture, Joe. And, you know, with the NIL, SMU was able to, I don't know if you know this or not, but SMU, when they joined the ACC, they actually turned down television right money for 10 years so they could join the ACC. Well, they've got two big oil tycoons as backers. So it didn't matter. They raised X amount of dollars in 2 months that covered the costs. And so SMU has been using all this NIL money to do what they've been able to do. And so on one hand, it kind of says that, all right, well, if you come from entitlement, you'll be able to just do extremely well very quickly. But the Rudys of the Notre Dame is becoming Rudy because they're not going to be able to be ever in the same league as SMU because SMU has leapfrogged them because they can get a bye in the first round. Notre Dame will never get a bye unless they join one of those cliques, join one of those guilds, join one of those conferences. I think the second word was a biblical word, guild. Sorry. I try to stay in the arena of the wordplay if I'm going down an analogy, Joe. But when I look at the culture that's happening and I look at someone like Notre Dame and I look at somebody like SMU, you go ask the average person which has the better football program, 99 out of 100 are going to tell you Notre Dame. I mean, historically, culturally, legacy. But Notre Dame, Joe, I think the Vatican's going to have to step in and start shilling out some shekels in order to get some NIL money for Notre Dame or something, some donors or something, Joe. I mean, talk to me a little bit about if the culture is shifting more towards where you're not comfortable anymore, like Nick Saban. Nick mm-hmm. Saban, he left Alabama after he did, I think it was 45 exit interviews with student athletes. Mm-hmm. He was so disgusted after those exit interviews. That's why he left, because how much the culture had changed. Think about that, how often that happens in business.
Yeah, I guess sticking with college football, certainly when it comes to Notre Dame, not a fan of the, you know, rent a quarterback scenario that they've had the last couple of seasons. And I think, you know, and I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I think by and large, though, especially looking ahead to next year, they're actually going to have a significant amount of homegrown talent on the roster, and it won't just be filled with transfers. Now, again, some people would say, well, hey, if you're looking to win and you got to play the game, but again, I would argue, yeah, understand the game, understand the rules of the game, know how to, you know, take advantage of the game, but still look for that way to be differentiated. Because again, if you can be known as that school that still actually develops talent, doesn't solely rely on the transfer portal. And again, in the case of Notre Dame, the last two seasons, you know, graduate transfers coming in from, I was going to say fellow ACC schools. It's like, you know, Notre Dame's like a half ACC football school, if you will. But, yeah, you know, I think there's an opportunity to, you know, to differentiate themselves, which will pay dividends in the long run. That's my opinion.
Maybe
I'm naive, short-sighted, overly optimistic, whatever. But I think the data suggests that they might be heading in that direction.
Was that your phone that just did a 1980s ring?
It was. Again, like I said, you're gonna lean into the legacy of Notre Dame. You gotta go way back.
That sounded like my
I'm a geriatric rigor. Millennial, Jason. So I get to bridge both, you know, both worlds there.
I thought Deb McGinnis was calling me down the street to come out and play some ditch there with that ringtone. I wasn't sure what was going on. All right. Anyways, but hey, Joe, I appreciate you coming on today to talk about these different things. Because quite honestly, I see these problems that are happening in sports clearly in other industries, other organizations, especially oil and gas, because the oil and gas industry is a very high testosterone industry still, mm-hmm. much like sports. And so any final thoughts here as we get ready for the holidays and et cetera?
Look, I think so much of the themes that we talk about, Jason, when it comes to leadership and decision-making and communication and all that we covered today, again, you can find them anywhere else. I think, you know, what the crude life does and what I try to do in my work is to make it hyper relevant, you know, tied into current headlines so that it's easier to recall, you know, it's easier to have at your fingertips to deploy so that it just doesn't become some generic gobbledygook and, you know, generic leadership talk. And so I think especially this time of year when there's so many distractions and it's easy to, you know, how much time and energy do people spend with throwaway comments and well wishes and everything else? You know, if you have the time to slow it down and say, look, you know, what can I do to differentiate myself? How can I take current events, sports headlines and whatever, and make what I want to say, what I need to say, just that much more powerful so that it sticks for somebody else? You know, that's, again, that's the way to differentiate yourself. So And that's why I love these types of conversations that we have, Jason. You know, I love the work that I do because it's an opportunity to, again, take all of these seemingly disparate things from the sports world, right? The benching of multi-million dollar quarterbacks and, you know, the constant shuffle of wannabe millionaire college kids entering the transfer portal and bring it back to some real life applications in whatever industry you're in. So as always, Jason, I appreciate the conversation and look forward to seeing what happens here in this first ever first round of college football playoff.
I was just going through the analogy in my head. And so like, if you're the CEO or president and you get demoted, you're probably going to be demoted as a backup quarterback would be equivalent to like going back to the sales department, going back to the engineering department, going back to the human resources or operations area. So you're going back to where you came out of the department, right?
Well, right. I got to interrupt there. There's one thing when I'm looking at that analogy, and I'll again, sorry to interrupt, but going back to this Kirk Cousins thing, remember one of the things he said was, you know, I haven't, or I won't forget how to play QB, right? It's not like I'm going to forget how to play QB. In the business world, Jason, I feel like when you have demotions at that level and people do get sent down or dismissed or whatever, it's amazing how many people will very quickly start saying, hey, did he or she ever really know how to play QB or how to lead? You know, again, Kirk Cousins, you can't take away his stats and his accomplishments. So when he says, I haven't forgotten how to play QB, people remember that. In the business world, I'll tell you, people will really start to question whether you actually accomplished what you thought you accomplished. So sorry for that, but that's I see that quite a bit, and I'd be remiss not to throw that in there here as we move to conclusion.
No, that's okay, because I was just going to end with the fact that, you know, and then you have Daniel Jones, quarterback for the New York Giants, that went through a similar situation, had a benching, a demotion. Well, he ended up on the practice squad, and then he ended up getting cut, whatever, but so I guess the practice squad would be the mailroom, I guess, huh?
Yeah, I feel like we could maybe offline here, we need to spend some time working through this analogy, but I like it. Yeah, I think that's the, there's still hope. You're working in the mailroom. There's still hope.
There's still hope.
But if you're the former CEO working in the mailroom, there's maybe hope of writing a book someday, but getting your job back is...
If you're the former $50 million quarterback, starting quarterback now working on the practice squad, is that any different than the CEO now in the mailroom? Not too much.
Well, I don't know. But then, you know, again, well, then that calls to mind, well, if the Falcons are going to keep paying some of that $50 million, next thing you know, that former quarterback's winding up on the Steelers and leading the Steelers to victory. But that's a whole nother analogy that we'll save for another day there with Russell Wilson and his bouncing career.
Or Cleveland, where you'll have one backup quarterback making $250 million, the starting quarterback making $1 million plus whatever Atlanta's paying. You see what I mean? It's like you've got like two of these three organizations where it's going to have to Jenga piece or Tetris piece together correctly to work. But Joe, hey, when's the podcast drop, the new one?
Heck, we might get a new one out on... Well, today, depending on when this is released here, it might be this might be some weird time warp here, Jason. So,
well, you recorded one earlier, right?
Yeah. So, to date things here, it'll be
should be out
about 24 hours before the Notre Dame game, but it will have nothing to do with Notre Dame. So, how about that?
All right. Hey, thanks, folks. Joe Sinnott with Whitting Partners.